Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with our friend Ray Allen. Ray is producing and engineering the show today on the other side of the glass. That's where we keep Ray. No, we have him. He'd be, if there was no glass, it'd be a little noisy because Ray talks to people that call the show. So we've got to have a little glass there between the two of us. It's the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday midweek edition, December 9th, 2015, coming to you live from Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Podcasts and our complete archive available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. During the hour, we will begin with a newsmaker interview with the Ward 5 Tucson City Councilman Democrat Richard Fimbres. Then our Arizona Water Quarterly. Karen Caesar joins us, Karen with the Central Arizona Water Conservation District of the CAP. And we'll close out the show with a conversation with Tucson's new police chief, Christopher Magnus. He'll join us from his home in the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area, Richmond, California, where he has been the police chief up in Richmond. And he'll share with us some of his thoughts for what he will be doing with the Tucson Police Department. Our live line number 790-2040, the Facebook page, is easy to find. If you know my name, you'll find us on Facebook, Bill Buckmaster, and you can follow us on Twitter at BuckmasterShow.com. Twitter is just at Buckmaster Show. There you go. All right, let's go now on the live line, Mr. Richard Fimbres, Tucson City Councilman, Ward 5. Councilman, how are you this holiday season?
Happy holidays, Bill, and thank you for having me on the show once again, and congratulations to you once again for the Arizona Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and then the you just voted by the Tucson Weekly name, Bill's Tucson's best radio talk show host. So congratulations on that. And then I understand you had an anniversary with your wife, Ann, and you're celebrating 40 years this year?
Well, let's see. You got it right on the first two, and thank you very much. Coming up May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, it will be, believe it or not, 44 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Quite a lot. Mary and I will be celebrating 38 years come August 4th.
Wow. So yeah, we go all the way back to 1972 when it began. But we met here at the University of Arizona in 1967, so we've known each other for almost a half a century. The first date was to see the Doors at High Corbett Field in May of 1967. They had just released Light My Fire and exciting times. Anyway.
Our first date was Grand Funk Railroad.
Oh,
it's like TCC, and I think I'm Your Captain was their big hit.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
you got to remember that stuff, Bill.
Oh, I remember all that stuff. Before we talk about what was a pretty busy council meeting last night, give us an update. You've been really kind of spearheading this effort to ask the Postal Service to please reconsider closing down the processing, Postal Center, Processing Center. Where are we on all of this?
Well, Bill, you know, as you know, and we've had plenty of discussions on this, the center should have closed in 2011, and we are still working to keep that center open. I know that we've lost two operations out of there, but we still have five going. And I tell you, my hat is off to Congressman Grijalva, Congresswoman McSally, and all our congressional delegation for working hard with us. It's not just about the 244 individuals that are there now working, but it's about the 26,000 small businesses that rely heavily on the Postal Center, the two tribes, the Pascua Yaq and the Tohono O'odham, and then our veterans and our seniors. And this is very important to us. You know, we are still in an economic downturn, and, you know, to help us, we need the Postal Center to be there, especially for all the small business people that use the rebate and the discounts that they offer. They can't afford to drive up to Phoenix and get those rebates and discounts. So those are our challenges. Senator Flake has sent a letter to the Postmaster General raising questions about the criteria used and asking for more information on why they are trying to close Campbell. I know that I just talked to Mike Varney this morning from the chamber, and he has been in touch with Senator McCain's office and asking him also to ask about the closure and to look at these things. So there's movement. I think that we were put on the to-be-determined list, and that gave us another year. And so we're working with our congressional delegation, and we're trying to get answers, and hopefully they'll rethink this thing and take off. There's 82 centers throughout the country, and like I think I've told you before, states like Vermont and Wisconsin have 4 and 5 distribution centers. Why don't they take one of those if they have to cut?
Yeah, I don't understand it. We're probably the largest city on that list that would be losing a processing center. So let me get this straight. The mail is still going when I put my Christmas cards. Yes, I still send Christmas cards. Just put a huge batch of them into the mail this morning. Now, will those cards be sent up to Phoenix for a postmark, or will they be processed here in town?
No, that's one of the things we lost was the postmark, and that goes up to Phoenix, and it'll come right back to us.
Hmm.
And that's been problematic for a lot of our small businesses. I think you've talked to George Khalil, Khalil Bottling, who's leading the business coalition groups, and they'll tell you about some of their business checks and things that the pay bills have been even postmarked Austin, Texas. So those are some of our challenges, and we're hoping that you post those Christmas cards earlier, because it's going to take there's a delay, and I think it's up to 5 days.
Wow.
So we're still pushing it, and like I said, to build Southern Arizona, and Governor Ducey has also sent a letter in support of keeping this postal center open, and I know that he's a businessman, and he understands that business implications of how this impacts our small businesses.
Okay. Busy meeting yesterday. The council approved a new homeless ordinance by a 5-2 vote, prompting some concern among community members. How did you vote, Councilman, on that?
I voted for it. We approved the proposed sidewalk ordinance by a 5-2 vote, and it gave us different options. It was option one, and we've been working with the business community, several advocates for the homeless, and also a lot of nonprofits and a lot of government entities over the last 6 months. And we've had a coalition of folks. Our next meeting is December 17th to talk about this. And in those meetings, Mike Rankin, our city attorney, has explained the ordinance, and we didn't get a lot of pushback at these meetings, and they understood it, and a lot of it has to do with prepackaging food was one of them, and then the space permit, and so those are some of the challenges that we've been looking at, but businesses gotta have to have a say also, and the business community is coming forward and have been talking to us. I think an option one, the amendment to existing code provisions that require that a person selling or giving away food or refreshment first obtain a permit. These revisions would provide that the one permit requirement applies both in a park and on sidewalks, streets, or other public property adjacent to the park. The requirement applies to the distribution of all foods or beverages without an exception for prepackaged items. The required permits would be free of charge. The permit is valid for 10 days and automatically is renewed for up to 60, a total of 60 days, unless health and safety conditions are developed that would prevent the renewal of the permit. And then there's cubic feet. Property cannot be so far from the sidewalk.
Well, I think people what their kind of bottom line is that the citizens they don't want to see a repeat of the pod people coming back to downtown this winter. What do you think the chances of that are?
Well, Bill, homelessness, folks can survive in our weather conditions, even though it gets pretty cold. It's not below 0 degrees, so people will be migrating to Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing some numbers that went to the Augusta Park, and these are some of the things that we're going to help them with. We had an issue at Santa Rosa Park and at the recreational center there, and we were able to clean some of those things up with the Parks and Rec's help and the Tucson Police Department's help. And then there's vets on patrol who have been doing a good job helping us with Santa Rita Park. So saturation is a problem, and how we're looking at this. Feeding sites have been a problem, and everybody seems to want to go in one area. And so we got a coalition of folks. I have my intern from ASU working on homelessness. His name is Matt Pate, along with Mark Kerr from my office. And we have Ward 6, Ward 3, Ward 1, the mayor's office, Carla Avilos from there, have all been working with a coalition of folks that to see how we can better network. The county put out a report called the GAPS report, and it talks about housing and what are some of the gaps in that area. And so we're also looking at some of those, changing some of those requirements so we can get more people into housing.
All right, it's coming up on 12:15. We're going to be talking to your new police chief, Councilman, in about a half an hour. Are you excited about this appointment of Christopher Magnus?
Yes, I sat in on the interviews, the community interviews, and Mr. Magnus said a lot of great things. He's got a lot of experience and knowledge. He's worked in a very diverse community. He's seen a lot of issues in California that haven't really come to us yet, so he can be very proactive in doing things. And the other thing I liked about him is that his ability to work with the business community and build and obtain other resources. Okay. You know, our police department, like our fire department, we're dealing with some older vehicles now, and we have to look at the fleet maintenance and doing some change-out things. And then I know that our officers, because of the drop programs, are leaving.
Yeah.
And we've been grateful that we've gotten some grants to help the academies keep running. But we got to find other resources. And that's why I introduced the impoundment lot resolution to make some changes there that allow us to, when the abandoned vehicles are there, to get a percentage of that to help us do cost recovery.
Okay.
The same thing with the pawn shop fee and the alarm fee.
All right.
Those are things we're talking about for cost recovery. So it's exciting times in our community.
All right. Councilman, stick around for another segment. But right now I need to tell, and gladly so, and I know you've been over there with your lovely wife, to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico.
Yes. Great area.
It is. One of our fine sponsors. We encourage folks, take the three-hour drive. If you're looking for a little road trip, head over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Visit their historic downtown, the galleries, the antique stores, the museums, really fine restaurants. A couple of the restaurants have been written up in the New York Times. There's a lot of nice places to eat and places to stay, like Pinos Altos Cabins and Silver City KOA and Burrow Mountain Homestead RV Park. So there's lots of accommodations, many things to do. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org.
Are termites chewing on more than your Yule log this holiday season? Five Star Termite and Pest Control's patented foaming process will rid your home of termites before your first snowball fight on Mount Lemmon. So call Five Star today and replace those termite tubes hanging from your ceiling with mistletoe and find someone to smooch under it. Call Five Star at 886-0045 and visit fivestartermite.com.
Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
Hi, Financial Whiz Kid here with some tax advice for you. This year, you can make a charitable gift to Christian Family Care and help provide safe foster homes and caring parents for kids who really need them. The Arizona Foster Care Tax Credit lets you donate hundreds of dollars to this worthy cause and take a state tax credit for all of it, so there is no expense to you. And chances are, you can claim it on your federal taxes too. It's so simple, even a kid can do it. To learn more, visit fostercarecredit.org. That's fostercarecredit.org.
Local Tucson business, American Openings, is pleased to be a sponsor of Gospel Rescue Mission. They're on a mission to restore lives that are afflicted by homelessness, hopelessness, and addiction. Each day, the Gospel Rescue Mission in Tucson houses, feeds, and ministers to hundreds of men, women, and children. Gospel Rescue Mission, where homelessness ends and lives are restored. You can learn more at grmtucson.com. American Openings is proud to support Gospel Rescue Mission.
Give local, keep local. That's what you can do by donating to a qualified charitable organization by December 31st. The money you'd otherwise pay in Arizona state taxes can benefit a local charity of your choice. Claim a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for 2015 by donating up to $400 for couples filing jointly and up to $200 for individuals. It's easy. Just go to givelocalkeeplocal.org. Choose an organization like Arizona Children's Association and Catholic Community Services. That's givelocalkeeplocal.org. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Learn about a rewarding career as a law enforcement officer. Pima Community College's Public Safety and Emergency Services Institute is offering a free information session December 16th at 6 p.m. at PCC's 29th Street Coalition Center, 4355 East Calle Aurora. Each year, PCC graduates hundreds of first responders who go on to work across Arizona. Call 206-3543 or visit pima.edu/PSESI. Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Buckmaster Show at 12:22, our Wednesday midweek edition. We have Councilman Richard Fimbres with us on the Buckmaster Show. Councilman, how did the Pima County bond failure affect your ward, Ward Number 5?
Well, it was about $60 million in projects would have been part of the would have happened in our area. The most important one, I think. Well, they're all important, but the U of A Tech Park. The innovative building there was about $20 to $25 million, and then the completion of the master plans for Quincy Douglas and El Pueblo Centers, the expansion of Silver Lake Park, and then the border between the 12th Avenue corridor, which borders between Ward 1 and Ward 5, was just as important too, because that's the gateway to downtown from Mexico, and we wanted to beautify those areas and do some things to encourage more business development in those areas. And then the roadwork projects also were part of that. So it was kind of disappointing to see the bond package go. I think maybe the citizens, because of the economic situation that we're in, weren't really they thought it was a lot. And I think that when we passed 409 on our roads and street project maintenance, it was just for that. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's discussions going on about maybe let's look at smaller packages to see what we need to do. You know, and I know that we are looking at charter review, and the committee has been formed again, and they're looking at some more options that we have to do to bring that 1929 document and making a living document that helps sustain us into the future.
Well, it's that time of year to help out some people. I know you've been very supportive of an organization, Jesse Lugo's organization, about Bike in a Box. You know, what is it? $45 buys a kid a bike.
Yes, it's Lugo Charities and Jesse and the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks Lodge 385 is pleased to announce that they'll be hosting the 7th Annual Bike in a Box Christmas event on Saturday, December 12th from about 11 a.m. to 12:30 at the Elks Lodge, 1800 North Oracle Road. And a special invitation is given to 500 underprivileged children selected from youth organizations, the schools, the churches, and children-supported agencies in the greater Tucson area who will be invited to come and receive a box and a safety helmet. This is a great thing that Jesse has done. The community has really come out and helped these folks. And not only does it promote, you know, it promotes health also, because when you're riding a bike, it takes physical exercise. Mm-hmm. And health is, you know, being healthy is very important nowadays.
Well, I gave a little money so a couple of kids could have a bike, and because I remember my first bike, it was probably one of the highlights of childhood, getting that bike and then, of course, immediately going outside in the very cold Chicago area winter and getting on the bike and the whole deal. It's great. Great experience.
My brother and I had two bikes, and what we were able to do is deliver newspapers. House to house. We were on the bikes. We had two different routes, and that's how we were able to get some spending money back then and buy our school clothes for the upcoming school year. So, you know, it offers folks an opportunity to do different things.
You know, it's not too late to donate. I think they can just go to kind of Bike in a Box on our Lugo Charities. Is that the way to do it?
Yes. You can still go to lugocharities.inc. Mm-hmm. And get a hold of Jesse, and he can pretty sure still use you. And they're also looking for volunteers to help help pass out the bikes from the trucks.
All right.
On that day.
Summary here for your particular ward, 2015. Will it be turn out to be a good year?
I'm hoping. We have, you know, this year we were recognized by MPA for the Home Goods Project. Mm-hmm. That $75 million construction project. And they're the parents of TJ Maxx and Marshalls. And they're looking at, right now, if you go out to Valencia and South Alvernon Way, you'll see that area being developed. And that's going to be a total of 910 jobs in the next 2 years. Initially, there's about 259 people working right now to build the center mm-hmm. on the 100 acres. And then they'll have 410 jobs the first year, and it'll go up to 900 afterwards. And that economic impact to our community is in the tune of about $830 million.
That's good news. What about
that's good.
And then we have FedEx
hub. The FedEx hub is about, if you keep going west, about two blocks down from there will be the FedEx hub, which is going to be another 160 jobs. And that is a $20 million construction project that will be expanded and their workforce for about 40 to 200. And that and then we have the bridges. We have this year coming in a 14-screen Cinemark, CenturyMark movie house at the bridges, and we'll have two additional restaurants coming in there. I can't release the names yet, but we'll be letting people know. And then VXI Tucson, shared services, and then we have a new company coming in, Creative Machines Center Senshi Manufacturing, and they provide businesses at about 30 employees coming into a building that's been vacant for about 7 years.
Oh, that's good news.
And Bill Hushmacher and Cade Industries have talked about expanding also. Mm-hmm. So these are important because we need to turn dirt, we need to put people to work, and we need to generate sales tax for our community.
Yeah, and we certainly do. And I want to point out, and I'm not even sure, I think it's in the county, the old MDA building up on Sunrise, they're going to have a tenant in that building, a high-tech company. So that's really good news.
And then last night at the Mayor and Council, the Banner Health Project, that's about $1 billion capital investment. And we approved the pad last night, so that's going to be working right there on Campbell and Grant. And that's going to be a big investment for the University of Arizona and helping to maintain that level one It's a level one, the hospital.
Yeah, level one trauma center.
Trauma center.
There
you
go.
The only one in Southern Arizona. Thank you.
All right. In the remaining minute, it's going to be a tough budget year, isn't it, 2016?
Yes, we're looking at about a $40 million budget, and about $27.3 million of that is public safety pensions. And so we got to find a way to work on that. I'm confident that the mayor and council and our city manager and our fine city staff are working on this thing. And we had a retreat last Friday to start laying down some groundwork. And so we're not out of it. And I think, Bill, we've had this conversation where when I got sworn in on December 7th, 2009, December 15th, they told us we had a $33.5 million budget deficit. The next year, we had a $44 million budget deficit. Then it went to $55 million budget deficit. And then we got it down to $20 million. And then this last year, we had to add $18.3 million because of the pension issue, public safety pension issue. So I haven't seen a good budget.
Okay.
So, but we're still moving there. And like I said, we got to get people back to work.
That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay. Councilman Fimbrace, I hope you and yours have a lovely holiday season. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill, and bless you and all your family.
Thank you very much. Richard Fimbrace with us just a few seconds now past 12:30 on Buckmaster Wednesday edition on December the 9th. We're going to talk about what I consider to be our most important resource, water. That's next on Buckmaster.
Ah, it's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours, but no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2-hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Learn about a rewarding career as a law enforcement officer. Pima Community College's Public Safety and Emergency Services Institute is offering a free information session December 16th at 6 p.m. at PCC's 29th Street Coalition Center, 4355 East Calle Aurora. Each year, PCC graduates hundreds of first responders who go on to work across Arizona. Call 206-3543 or visit pima.edu/PSESI.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
This is Ryan Foster from Better Business Bureau. Do you know a business in Southern Arizona worthy of a BBB Torch Award? Nominations are in three categories: ethics, customer excellence, and good neighbor for community service. We're looking for nominations in each. This is a great opportunity to show what sets your company apart from others in our community. Nominate yourself or a business you love by clicking the button on our homepage at tucson.bbb.org. Deadline to nominate is December 16th. The 2016 Torch Awards will take place on May 5th at Casino del Sol Resort. To register to attend, sponsor, or nominate, visit tucson.bbb.org.
Sometimes opportunity knocks. You've definitely met opportunity, and it may have even found you online. Opportunity also calls. It calls to see if you have an open appointment, even though it's really last minute. It calls to place a rush order for delivery, and it calls to ask about your holiday hours. With Cox Business Voice Manager, you can always follow up with opportunity. So when it leaves a voicemail, you'll get it right to your email, which means all of your important messages reach you online. With Cox Business, you'll never miss an opportunity, no matter how it presents itself.
Bundle Cox Business Voice Manager and Internet for only $99 per month with a one-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card. Mention reward promo to qualify. Online redemption required. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 1/3/16. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, 12:35, and once a quarter here on the program, we focus on what I consider to be our most important resource here in Arizona, and that is water. Without water, well, where would we be? We'd be up a creek, maybe. We'd be in big trouble. Arizona Water Quarterly, presented by Central Arizona Project. Your water, your future. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is Karen Caesar. Karen, a member of the governing board of the Central Arizona Water Conservation District. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Doing real well. And we keep hearing about El Nino. El Nino is going to benefit us, we hear, with some really wonderful rain this winter. Is it expected to help what we need on the Colorado River?
Well, the best answer I can give you is we hope so. Our fingers are crossed. We've actually looked at the CAP, and our analysts at the CAP have looked at the flows in the Colorado River related to the past 9 El Nino winters, which stretch back many, many years, and have found that of those 9, 3 were above normal flows, 3 were average, and 3 were below normal flows. So, you know, we're looking at a 30% chance of any one of those scenarios.
Well, that's good to know, because I think we've been getting the message, El Nino, guarantee you're going to get a lot of rain. But that doesn't, apparently the case from your analysts, it's pretty much a 30% deal.
Right. El Nino normally gives southern Arizona, so here in Tucson, Pima, Pinal counties, better than average precipitation. And this one's probably going to be very strong and give us a lot of rain here. For example, in October, Arizona had 150% of normal rainfall across the state. But during that same month, the upper watershed, which is areas like in Utah, southwestern Wyoming, where the largest tributaries to the Colorado River originate, so where the water really comes from, had about half of their normal precipitation. So wet in the south, drier up north.
Yeah, so just because we're getting rain down here in southern Arizona is not necessarily going to translate to the headwaters of the Colorado River.
Exactly. And that goes back to the study that we've looked at. It's really, you know, it's really going to be a wait and see what it does up in the upper watershed. But the good news is that with the additional precipitation that we can hope for and we're already seeing in Arizona and in Southern California, less Colorado River water may be needed by, for example, the farmers that use a lot of the river down here. If they don't have to fulfill their orders, that may allow us to keep some more water in Lake Mead. So it still may help, but it won't help the Colorado River flows. It will just help demand on the here toward the end of the pipeline.
And Lake Mead is so crucial to all of this, because there have been all sorts of issues about the water level on Lake Mead. So this could possibly, Karen, delay a shortage on the river.
Right. And I think the really operative word is delay. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, last time we were here, I talked about how CAP and our similar water providers in California and Nevada were working to voluntarily leave about 740,000 acre feet or 240 billion gallons of water, you know, of the Colorado River water in Lake Mead. And that's to delay the shortage on the Colorado River, but I'm going to talk in a minute about why that's not going to prevent the shortage.
Yeah, and that leads me to the obvious question, what happens if the drought continues? Is, are we experiencing what you could call almost a new normal for the Colorado River?
Well, you know, we have been in this drought for over 15 years with El Nino aside, no idea that it's going to abate. So we're planning again for the long term. And we're not just focusing at CAP on shortage delaying programs that we were just talking about. We're also now working with a lot of the major Colorado River water users within both Arizona and other states to develop longer term strategies to stabilize the water levels in Lake Mead.
So what many people perhaps don't realize is that the reason that Lake Mead is falling is not only the 15-year drought that we've been in.
Exactly. So a term that we use at CAP and is used in the water communities around the Colorado River is called the structural deficit. And it's basically the fact that Arizona, California, Nevada, and Mexico collectively use more water each year than normally flows into Lake Mead. So drought or no drought, the water levels in Lake Mead are falling between 10 and 12 feet a year.
So we've known about this, I guess, this structural deficit for decades, Karen?
Yes. You know, since the 60s, we knew that there was more Colorado River water allocated to the users than the river contained. But until this long-term drought began, that fact was sort of masked in the fact that if the lake is full, the lake is full. You can't put more water in the lake. So everyone was, you know, kind of like riding on that high tide notice, you know, no pun intended. Now with the drought, it's really come into focus that we have to pay attention to this structural deficit as well as our drought planning.
So how do we kind of plan for this kind of ongoing deficit?
Well, that is the big question. Mm-hmm. We have been talking prior to this a lot about shortage and avoiding shortage, but again, that's a more of a short-term situation. Unless we find ways to remedy this ongoing structural deficit, CAP, our customers here in Arizona, are going to end up shouldering the largest share of the burden that results from some annual declines. So we are working with our neighbors, with our, you know, fellow, you know,
Southwestern partners,
Nevada and California specifically, to try to come up with some other big ideas to help solve this problem.
So what are you looking at for, what will the focus be for the Central Arizona Project in 2016?
One of our big, in addition to all the water, you know, structural deficit and the regular planning, we're also keeping an eye on the energy side of delivering water. Again, you have to remember the CAP is one of the largest water consumers of electricity in the state. It takes a lot to, you know, bring that water from the Colorado River all the way here to Tucson.
That's something a lot of people don't realize, the electrical usage, the power generation that's needed.
It is. It's a
people
lot of
people just think it just I guess
shows
flows
up. Right.
Down
no,
to
there's
Tucson.
Those pumps take a lot of energy. And so one of the things we're doing is building in some resiliency into our system by building some new transmission lines. And then we also have to keep an eye on what's happening with the Navajo Generating Station.
Yeah, that's a huge issue. The Navajo Generating Station kind of flies under the radar here in Southern Arizona. People don't really understand how important it is, but it is crucial to the delivery of Central Arizona Project water.
No, absolutely. And we have been finding, you know, one of the things that happened within the last year is we have been able to find viable alternatives to some recent EPA rulings on regional haze. That was a short-term solution. We are now also looking at longer-term challenges that are going to be faced by the power plant, including ongoing environmental assessments required to extend the leases that the Navajo Generating Station, also called NGS shorthand, has with the Navajo Nation.
Get involved, people. If you have questions about water, there was an opportunity last month, and we had talked about this upcoming water forum that was upcoming the last time you were with us, and it was turned out to be a very successful event, Karen.
Yeah, it was. We had over 200 people who came to that forum here in Tucson and learned a lot about the water issues facing Southern Arizona. This is an ongoing dialogue, and one of the things that, you know, I would like to say on behalf of the CAP and your fellow Pima County board members and myself, as well as the whole board, is we want to make sure we really spend time talking and reaching out to communities and getting them involved and understanding. I was recently a guest of the Kiwanis de Amigos here in town and spoke to that group, and they were very interested to learn what's going on with the CAP. I would invite other community groups who are interested to contact the CAP and arrange for a presentation.
I mean, you are available to talk to groups.
Not only am I available, I want to do this. It's part of what I think is really important. Our outreach and communication, particularly in Tucson, I can't say it enough. I always say we're out of sight, out of mind.
There you go.
And we need to know, everybody in Pima County needs to know and understand what's happening with the CAP.
Karen Caesar, thank you very much for joining us, talking about, giving us an update about what's going on with the Central Arizona Project. And Central Arizona Project, your water, your future. Go to their website probably for more, right?
All the information's there.
All right. Karen Caesar, thank you so much. I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season.
And you and to your listeners, too. Thanks,
thank
Bill.
Thank you very much, Karen. All right. 12:45 on Buckmaster. We'll speak with the new police chief of Tucson. He will be joining us on the live line from I'm not sure if he's here in Tucson already, but or he's still up in the East Bay of the Bay Area. But we'll talk to Chief Magnus right after this.
It's 6 a.m. and my flight leaves for Denver in 2 hours, but no need to rush. Because I'm flying out of Tucson, I have some extra me time, which means I can relax and start my day the way I love to start every day, with a run, a hot shower, and breakfast with my family, not a 2-hour drive in rush hour traffic.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson, it's the way to go.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. What if our future is space? Experience Mars and Beyond at Biosphere 2 every Saturday at our weekly What If special event during December. Growing food on Mars and seeing beyond the solar system are just a few of the adventures you can experience. Come visit the must-see wonder of the world today. Info at biosphere2.org. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show at 10 minutes now before 1 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon. Come January 1st, City of Tucson will have a new police chief. Roberto Villasenor is retiring, and the new chief is with us on the live line, Christopher Magnus. Chris Magnus has been chief over in Richmond, California, in the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area. Chief, how are you?
I'm great. It's nice to be with you.
Tell me a little bit about, are you excited about this new job?
Oh, I'm very excited about it. I think Tucson is a great city from what I've seen so far. People have been incredibly welcoming so far. Not there yet, and probably will be starting in mid-January just because of the challenges of making such a big move and leaving a job and doing it over the holiday season. But I've visited a couple times already, talking with people in the department and the community, and really looking forward to getting started.
What do you think the number one challenge will be for you, Chief?
Well, I mean, obviously the challenge, ironically, it's the same challenge that we're facing right now in Richmond, California, where I've been working. But Tucson, I know, is dealing with some big budget issues, like many cities. And so, you know, the challenge is how we retain the and build upon, frankly, the public safety needs in the city and address those even in tough budget times by, you know, looking for efficiencies, pursuing grant opportunities. Obviously, we're going to be doing some continued evaluation of our staffing levels, the staffing study coming out shortly that I'm going to be very interested in. But how do we maintain the high quality of police services and really build on that, even with budget challenges? I think that's a big concern.
What was the crime situation like when you took over in Richmond? And for people who do not know about Richmond, if they've been to the Bay Area, Richmond is a community south of Oakland in the East Bay. How bad was the situation when you took over?
Well, it was pretty tough. I've been here 10 years. It's hard to believe. Richmond, you know, it's a hardscrabble industrial city that has struggled for a very long time with very high rates of crime, poverty, joblessness, a lot of different challenges to deal with. And, you know, at one point we were as high as a homicide a week, and for a city of 110,000, that's a staggeringly high number. It put us in the highest rankings for violent crime cities in the country. But by working closely with the community and really bringing people together with some common goals, approaching, crime very much like a public health challenge, and and incorporating a lot of different resources to do the work, we've been able to bring that down. Last year we had 11 homicides, which is really a significant decrease. And, you know, the work's not done, but I'm confident that we're moving in the right direction here.
All right, let's take a call or two. Folks do want to speak with the new chief. Greg has called us at 790-2040. Greg, go ahead. You're with Chief Magnus.
Chief Magnus, congratulations on the new opportunity here in Tucson. I'd like to share with you yet just something that happened this past week, actually, where there was an individual that officers were looking for, and I had contact with him, and I arranged to bring him in. It was a domestic violence, nothing serious, but they have a policy here. So Officer Torres from that unit here met with me and another officer, Kazmider, and they handled it smoothly. I mean, they didn't, you know, have the guy on the ground, and because he was willing to turn himself in. But during that hour of conversation, Chief, I learned that the money that an officer is paid here in Tucson is ludicrous. It's low, very low. And what happens here is folks are going to other agencies. Mm-hmm. So will you be able to approach our council here and say, look, our guys and women are not getting enough?
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, great question, Greg, and thanks for your comments about how well that situation was handled, because DV incidents can be very tough sometimes, so I'm glad to hear that things were handled so professionally. I agree with you that, and I don't think you'd find disagreement from the manager or the council or anybody from what I've seen about the, you know, challenges of retaining Tucson officers given the current pay levels. So, you know, we're dealing with a quandary that's very similar to what a lot of cities are dealing with, which is we want to retain the staffing that we have, and we also want to pay people a competitive wage, yet we're dealing with a significant budget deficit, and how do we reconcile those things? And that's going to be, as I said, that's going to be one of my top challenges, because I do care about making sure officers and professional staff in the department are appropriately compensated, and we're going to be looking at some ways that we can work towards that. I don't think it's something that's going to be changed overnight. I think the city manager has been very straightforward about that, but that's clearly the direction we want to move, and we're going to figure out some creative ways to do that, I believe.
Chief Magnus, we had Councilman Richard Fimbres on at the beginning of the hour today, and he was sharing with our listeners about the fact that the, I guess you call it the rolling stock, the police cars are really aging, deteriorating. That's going to be a huge investment, Chief.
You're right. And I mean, this is another good example of how tough this challenge is, because, you know, so we were just talking about the need to compensate officers appropriately so we can retain them, especially when we make investments in them in terms of, you know, putting them through an academy and providing them with a lot of training and equipment. But then there's also the issue of, you know, that equipment itself. Officers obviously rely, especially in a city as large as Tucson, on the ability to get around, to get to call safely, to do their jobs. That police car is their office. And so, you know, figuring out how we replace an aging fleet in a smart way is a big issue. It's just not safe or appropriate to have officers driving around in cars, you know, with over 100,000 miles on them. But you're right, it's a massive expense. So how we do that is something, you know, I'm going to be working closely with the other city departments on, and that's going to be a goal, because that has to be safe and effective.
What about your own background? Why did you get into law enforcement? You were in Richmond, and before that, was it in the Midwest somewhere?
Yeah, you're so right. I started my career and worked as a police officer, kind of working my way up through the ranks in Lansing, Michigan.
That's there you go.
The capital city in Michigan, and it's a tough, you know, little city in its own right, but some similarities in that Michigan State University is right next door, another big school like AU, and so UA, I got to get
UA, right.
I think, you know, one of the things that drew me into policing there was, you know, the ability to really engage with the community, both to reduce crime and to kind of change how police are perceived. I got into policing back in the 80s. It was a tough time. There were, you know, crack epidemic in a lot of cities, including Lansing. And the goal is, how do you police effectively and reduce crime, but at the same time not alienate people who live in a lot of the neighborhoods that are impacted and really treat people fairly? So, I really enjoyed the opportunity to learn and build my skills as a police officer there. And then, you know, you sort of move, as you go through your career, you think, well, I'd like to be making some of the policies and dealing with some of these things at a higher level. And so I've been fortunate to have that opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to doing that in Tucson.
Well, we welcome you to our community, and we'll look forward to having you with us here live in the studio after you get settled in, Chief Magnus. Thank you very much, sir, and have a wonderful, happy holiday season to you.
Well, thank you so much, and the same for you and for all your listeners. I'm really excited about coming there. I think it's a great department, a great city, and I'm just thrilled to be part of it.
Thanks a lot. Christopher Magnus with us on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up this afternoon for Tucson at 4, our friend Mike Shaw is the host of that program from 4 to 5. Ray Allen produces and engineers that show as well, does a fine job. Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 8. Chris and Joe, The Daily Double. Chris DeSimone, 8 to 9. And then The Talk of the Town, our newest local talk show with Sean McCluskey, comes on from 9 to 10. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you on Thursday, 12:04. Till then, have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.